Warner's going to come join us. Is that cool?
Nice. All right. Let's.
I just got to forward him the invite. I got to get him. I get him the invite to the meeting.
Things awesome. Will get a little more cray cray now.
We're going to get wild now.
There he is.
Oh, what's up?
There he is.
Hello.
How are you guys in England doing? Is it still cold? This guy's beautiful here in D.C. It's like 70 degrees and cherry blossoms and high winds and you know, all that kind of. Oh, there's a protest outside of the Watergate today.
Oh.
You know, the Saudi embassy.
Oh, yeah.
How's that going?
It's spilling into the streets, and they got cops everywhere. But the protest signs say something in English, but they're so complicated, you got to get right up to the sign to even know what they're protesting.
Figure it out.
Well, that happens like every day.
You were getting wrapped up in the esoteric and theosophical influences of ufology before you popped in, so I'm pretty sure you can jump on that bandwagon.
Oh, yeah,
you got to.
Tell us everything you know, John Warner.
The occult is knowledge, and it's also knowledge of communication with higher beings.
There you
so
go.
That's ET. I mean, we're all galactic citizens. You know, Earth people are just, you know, young and dumb and violent. But, you know, so were others. And so I think the occult comes in where it's all drills down to Zeptepi Egypt and the priest caste who were psychic, presumably. I think that's where the secret society is and everything. It was all psychic members because, you know, they could talk to higher intelligence and understand things like we do. And so they got bored with the hoi polloi and the lower people. And I'm like, well, shit, let's form a society and so we can talk. And so that's what, I mean, the four of us constitute, you know, an ad hoc secret society. I mean, how many people in the world understand what we're into? I mean, you know, John D., if he and Kelly, you know, were doing Babylonian rituals. And so they were in contact with higher forces, I think. I don't know about the Spanish Armada thing, but, you know, they were able to do some things. You know, it's very curious because Queen Elizabeth I, being of the royal bloodline and all that jazz, if you look up Queen Elizabeth I, the famous painting is she's in all this garb. Well, what's sewn onto her garb? And it's jewels. And as we know, gems and jewels are energetic. And so presumably, and of course she's wearing a crown or a tiara or something, these were all psionic enhancements for the royal bloodlines. I mean, they were the ones who could afford it. And, you know, and then the paintings show everyone with a halo. Well, in the Renaissance, those were all, you know, Medicis or clergy or kings. You know, the Medici isn't, they were in the families of Italy, the royal, you know, the royal bloodline families. And so that just meant you weren't holy, whatever that, it just meant you were continued with your psionic and maybe some telekinesis in there. And that's how powerful families stayed rich and presumably, I think, and powerfuls, I mean, everyone was stabbing and poisoning each other with rapidity. So that's like, you know, but I think that's what it is. And so crowns and tiaras and scepters and the globe and the British royal family, these are, you know, whether they work today with the royal bloodlines might be pretty watered down by now.
But
in the old days, that's why they interbred, so that it wasn't to get the Habsburg jaw. It was they were trying to keep their psionic abilities alive because they had to know who was coming around the corner with a knife.
And then communicate to whoever they were too, right?
Like, right. Let's just talk about Elizabeth I. She's badass, and so, you know, she's sitting there in the court with John D, and John D's whispering in her ear, and she's like, you know, I'm looking at this guy. He's got, you know, I can read his mind. He's got duplicity on him. And so how the royals were kept so powerful, although a lot of them were murdered?
Did you guys see the weird video footage of Elizabeth's funeral procession where there was that strange interruption of the news feed and there was a pretty weird sentence said by this like female voice that some people think sounds eerily like Princess Diana? You know about this?
Yeah.
It was
no return or something.
Yeah, like if
death is irreversible.
Yeah, it was legit because it was actually it like people have got recordings of it from the news from like when it was live, and it's like a camera panning of the funeral procession, and like there's a news anchor, a male news anchor, talking about the funeral, and then it cuts, and this woman's voice comes in and says, "The death is irreversible, and the fact that she is trapped," and then it cuts out, and it's just this really weird little moment that people captured, and nobody really knows what it means, and then they tried to fob it off, and they said, "Oh, it was a hot mic." And it was a woman, it was a grief counselor who was there for children. And it was like, bro, like none of what she said contextually makes sense for speaking to children about anything.
The death is irreversible and the fact that she's
trapped. As you can see here in London, it is a lovely day. And as the hearse heads out into West London.
And everything around them's weird. Like, Ross heavily connected to the esoteric, the occult. Like, I mean, you know where...
Warner, you've met them. Shit, you know they're weird.
You get a very weird vibe. Let's see, I met the Queen 3 times. And when I was little, I met the rest of the family.
That's crazy.
7 and that was 13, 14. But yeah, it's weird. And I never understood like why it was such a big deal. And then my sister knows everything about royals. She's not a conspiracy, although, well, she is a little bit. And because we talk about these weird bloodlines, and she's like, because she's met a lot of royal people over the world in her lifetime. She's a little kooky, but she's very smart. And she met Epstein and Ghislaine somewhere.
Oh, damn.
She was in those highfalutin circles. And I said, you know, she said, well, I made a lot of friends, but you get a real weird vibe around the royals. And, you know, the last time I saw Queen Elizabeth was 2007. So that's when my dad got a KBE. And she was sitting alone in a room in Windsor Castle. And we were talking about the repairs and everything. And I don't know, and it's like she's sitting there and you're like, here's this powerful woman and she's just sort of really boring. But, you know, I admire her World War II efforts. She was a mechanic and a truck driver.
Yeah, that's rad.
So I wrote it in my new book. She's at a party at the Savoy Hotel at the Victory Europe Day. But, you know, I think those royal people... gosh, you know, this bloodline thing is just so weird. It doesn't matter if it's overblown or something. There's a lot of people that take it really seriously. I have a friend, and she's hooked up with this Dragon Society of Scotland, and they have this funky website. It just looks silly, and she's like, don't let the website fool you. These are serious people. And they did my father's, so I know I'm related to James II and Robert the Bruce, the Stuart bloodline. But the Mellon bloodline, they said, it's been washed.
You can't find any information on it.
You can, but it's 23andMe shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The Mormons did my dad's genealogy, and so I know I'm related to Wild Bill Hickok.
Interesting.
You can't get any of that shit in 23andMe. That's all junk. That's all CIA, you know, just databasing people. But they're looking for people with weird genetics for sure.
Yeah.
And this, my friend, is one of those people. And she's been in some of these programs in the military industrial complex. And that's her story. So, and I believe her. But she says that you just look at the circumstantial evidence. The British royal family doesn't... hang out with people it doesn't consider part of the bloodline club. And so my great-grandfather hung out. He was ambassador to England in 31, so he knew them. And then Paul Mellon, I think he told me he met Queen Elizabeth at the end of World War II in London, and they were fast friends ever since. They had the horse racing thing in common. She would come stay with him in Upperville, Virginia. I think she came 2 or 3 times. And I have an article in the local papers that said, you know, Paul Mellon, uncountry ambassador to the British royal family. And so I have that proof that she did come. My mom remembers. I remember because he has his own jet strip. you know, they would fly in on a private jet. Mm-hmm. And one day. But so the Mellons and the British royal family, I mean, what the heck? You know, I thought it was no big deal. You know, I thought, just rich people, shit. You know, my sister was like, no. They wouldn't be allowed. She wouldn't be allowed to have a friend in my grandfather unless he was, you know, bloodline.
Okay. Related.
Oh, you know, wow. Yeah. You know, like, you're clear. Yeah, the British family doesn't come to stay with you to your home. You know, this was the Queen, Prince Philip, and Charles and Diana back in the 80s. I know. I remember that. So my mom says, come on over. We'll meet Diana and Charles. And I said, I got a party of your friends to go to fuck the royals. I didn't care. I really did.
Your bloodline, though, right, is like, it's, yeah. I mean, if you get into all that stuff, it's Stuarts and Robert the Bruce. So Robert the Bruce was Templar Knight. He's a Templar.
Yeah, so he's a Templar.
I'm going to be a Templar Saturday, by the way. I'm being knighted as a Templar on Saturday.
Tell him you want to be a Teutonic Knight and you want to drink the blood, black blood from this black stone.
Oh, ooh.
They have to heat it up. Yeah. I think you're going to have to Silesia.
You sure you want to be sipping from that stone, John?
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
I don't know. Don't drink anything.
I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to drink
this wine, the blood of Moloch. Don't
drink the blood of Moloch. I don't know. I'll let you know how it goes.
No, like Stuarts, they're like connected to the, you know, like the Holy Blood, Holy Grail stuff.
Yeah, Mary, Queen of Scots. Is a distant relative. My sister used to make a big deal of that when we were kids. In fact, my sister Mary, she would call. They never got along. They still don't get along. They pull each other hairs out. But my sister Virginia is very knowledgeable about these royals. She knows a lot of them, or did. And, you know, when I can get her to have a cogent conversation, she tells me things that, like, they take it very seriously, who they hang out with. Prince Andrew, you know, and God, he's an idiot. But anyway, but the Queen and now King Charles, it's like they only consort with people that are, you know, probably of the same vibratory bloodline thing, genetics. Apparently, some person said your genetics vibrate at a frequency.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know, maybe that's how they know they anoint their little minions with awards and things. And so there's something to all that. I think these bloodlines have been watered down, but fucking A. I mean, the Committee of 300 Families, if you look up a list of CEOs and owners of corporations, like my uncle Tim Mellon owns Pan Am Scissor Railroad. Now he's investing in free energy, and he's RFK's biggest donor. He's trying to siphon votes away from Biden, and it'll work. He's one of them. So, but if you look up these people that are CEOs and you go back in their genealogy, they're of the bloodline.
Wow.
Like Musk. He's an Afrikaner German. Farrell says he's got bloodlines going back to, I don't know, Frederick the Great or something. And so it's no happenstance that, like, the Facebook kid, yeah, he's just some kid from bumfuck. I don't know where he's from. And he knew his genealogy. I bet you could find something interesting. They want these people involved in, you know, big corporations, businesses, and politics and power. And, you know, so a lot of these senators and congressmen, not all, But a lot of them, the powerful ones, I bet my guess is if you did their genealogy, they're related, like the Bushes are related to the royal family.
Right.
Directly. Yeah. And so, yeah. And so, you know, it's not a conspiracy theory. You can actually prove a lot of this.
Every
president one is related
to the British royal family down the line.
Yeah.
It's King John. I think it's they're related to King John of England, like every single one of them. Yeah,
right.
It's crazy.
And so my crazy theory lately is, like, the four of us, awakened people that, I mean, truly awakened people that kind of, you know, have expanded minds and understand a lot of this highfalutin shit. Do your bloodlines. I wonder if the genetics are there.
I know that in our family, we were, on my mom's side, we were royal advisors in the court of King Henry VIII. That's as far as we managed to get.
Right. So the advisors are not allowed in a court unless they're bloodliners. I mean, that's what a court is. That's what John Dee.
Nobody sent me my check in the mail for the Illuminati.
It's not a paying gig. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but everyone's like, oh, we're all spiritually awakening. And I'm wondering, I wonder if a lot of people are of the bloodline. Doesn't matter how much. They say most people are related to everybody, but I wonder if there's a percentage-wise, because I never knew I was related to... I told that to my sister, and she said, oh, no. I said, well, this comes from the top. And so she says, well, then the Mary Queen of Scots things was true. And I said, yeah, probably. But they hide some of this stuff. So,
well, the Mormons, like, believe it or not, they own Ancestry and something, and I think another one, but the Mormon Church, huge.
BlackRock. Wouldn't BlackRock get the Ancestry DNA?
They might have, but previously it was all Mormon based, and I couldn't figure that out. And then I could be completely wrong on this, but I think it's something like if you could prove in your, if you're like all of a sudden I became a Mormon and that I could prove all of my lineage forever, that I could be being a Mormon, I could bring all of these dead people with me when I die, and they can get their own planets too.
Yeah, that sounds like a scam to me.
It's just
I wanted to tell Jay this story. You guys have heard this, but it's like, you know, I listen to everybody, and just to get a holistic picture of everything. And a lot of channelers, you know, they channel ETs, and they're like, ETs have great advice, you know, work on your vibration, be positive, help others. Mm-hmm. But then when the question of religion comes up, the ETs go, well, you know, source is everything. It's everything in the cosmos. And, you know, they say, well, what do you do? What's your day job? And they're like, well, we do this, that, and the other, but we, you know, we're always trying to do things so we can become closer to source. And so the channeler is like, all right, excellent. And then you get another channeler like, well, you know, that's great. But we contacted the sixth dimensional or seventh dimensional guys. And they said, yeah, you know, we're doing all kinds of cool stuff, the galaxy and stuff. And we're still trying to get closer to source. And they're like, oh, well, that's what the other guy said. And they said, yeah, you know, but, you know, you should talk to the ninth dimensional guys. So somebody channeled the ninth dimensional guys. And they're like, well, you know, we're doing lots of things. And, you know, everything's going great, and we're really getting, you know, moving along, getting closer to source. And they're like, well, why can't, you know, you contact source for your ninth dimensional? And say, I don't know, we're going to put a phone call into the 10th and 11th dimensional guys, but they haven't returned our calls. And so it's like, I smell a rat. You know, it's like, we're trying to get closer to source. Got to get to know source and all that. And it's like, you get higher up the dimension. We're still trying, you know. Wait a minute.
This is the cosmological carrot on the stick that we're.
Disclosure's right around the corner. It's like, right around the corner.
Yeah, it's a big year. It's gonna be a big year.
There's no answers. They're just, you know, someday you'll be closer to source. Like, who is this? You know, Gnostic Sophia, female vibration, cosmic, you know, nurturing force. It's the force in Star Wars. And it's like, I don't think you're not supposed to know it. You just get close and, you know, get a cop of feel or something.
Yeah. quick little squeeze on your way to the
reincarnation. Yeah, oh, it was great, but we're going to come down. And then they say that we're going to come down and hang out with you guys on Earth. We're going to come down and relearn everything. You know, all the dimensions. And then we'll create a 12th and a 13th. And it's
sure.
Like, boy, that you've done all that work and you want to come down and learn everything from a different perspective? Holy shit. I hope I didn't choose to do that.
Father, man, like the fact that you're here on this dimensional plane would suggest that you did choose to do that. We got a lot of dimensions to climb up before we're back to this supposed source.
I smell a rat. I mean, somebody said, so here's your full contract. Why don't you check all the boxes? Oh, well, what's this box? Don't worry about it. Just check them all. And I was like, oh, fuck it. And then they're like, I can't.
What do you think of the like the whole louche farming thing?
Oh, well, here's something interesting with that, because that's in the Old Testament. Give Lucifer his louche. And so it goes back.
By the word louche?
Yeah, louche. And so it's look it up, louche, and you give Lucifer his louche. That's in the Old Testament. So
I'm going to get a t-shirt that says that. God hates you, John Warner. Give Lucifer his louche.
Right. This is chi, prana, a life force energy. And so it exists. And that's what acupuncture and Asian modalities are all about. Yoga and Tai Chi. In fact, I'm hooking up with a guy. I'm going to start doing Tai Chi.
Ooh, that's cool.
The Germans have a word called Schadenfreude, and that means to take pleasure in another's suffering. So when we were kids, we would tease a kid and, you know, group, and we all got high off it. That's louche. It's a dopamine serotonin rush. But if you talk to some of the mystical folks, they say, oh, no, that's powerful. What do nations do when they stomp on somebody and we're gray? You know, what does Hitler and then high command get a high from, you know, when they invade Poland and Romania? You know, this is what louche is. It's not just this sort of adrenal dopamine serotonin rush. You're actually... it's the life force.
I can't find any reference to louche in...
It's Alush, A-L-U-W-S-H.
Yeah, I don't... It's spelled by several different names.
A-L-U-W-S-H.
Alush. It's in the Quran as well.
Luke 4:1-2. Jesus speaks about the duty and alertness that the servants should have while carrying out their duties in their master's house.
Yeah, we got it. I got it. It does appear in the Bible, but it's not related to the concept of louche.
That's what I think is going on with this louche stuff. I think it's real. These satanic groups wouldn't be raping and killing children if they didn't get a high. I mean, yes, they drink the blood and the Dreamacron and all that shit. That's a physical... It's a physical compound of blood with oxygenated adrenaline. But I wonder, louche is more chi energy. I wonder if it's infused with the chi louche.
Well, I mean, if they're doing it in like a ritualistic setting, it's probably like, you know, it's involving.
Right. And that's what I, when I read that and I connected all that, I was like, mm.
But a lot of people like, because like it's part of the whole louche thing and like kind of goes into the, you know, the Gnostic Archon idea of like we're basically just being recycled and harvested forever, and it, you know, you got to break out of that cycle,
which I think awakening people are doing. And in fact, I mean I think four of us, when we pass away, we could, you know, we'll be like, hey, fuck you.
I hope so, bro.
You'll never stop learning in the cosmos. I'm ready to go on and learn. I want to go to some library in a different star system and spend lifetimes learning everything without, you know, a deep state and horror and war and negativity and all that shit. I've had enough with the Earth deal.
Yeah.
I feel like my soul's been here for a long time. I'm sure you guys feel the same.
I came out feeling 4,000 years old.
I mean, when I was 10, I remember they sent me this. No, I was 8. They sent me to the child psychologist. I was in second grade. And this is 1970. And the guy's like, your mother taught you to read and write at age 2. And I said, yeah. And he's like, well, they say you have a reading problem. And I said, I don't have a problem. I don't want to read that. I'd rather go to the library and read books on something else. War, usually, you know, wood. But that's what I did. And that's where I got to become a historian, is in the school library all my life.
I did the same thing, Warner. I finished 4 years in high school and 3, and they're like, do you want to go to college? And I was like, no. I just went to the library and read all the shit I wanted to read for an entire year.
You know, one of the reasons I left Twitter is not only I'm just angry, I'm the angry man, but it's like people are dumb. Sorry. Really dumb.
Yeah, they really are.
But I realized how addictive it was, and I was like, when I would post something funny, meme, you know, even with a message, and it's like, I recognized I was getting a dopamine high, and I was like, no. I know exactly what I'm doing with this thing. And I knew that going in, kind of. It wasn't like I was...
it gets
there's a lot of addictive things. I mean, like John and I are into old cars. You know, I distract myself with that. Otherwise, I'd go insane.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of stuff. And YouTube, you know, the algorithms feed you flashy things like, you know, pink Cadillacs and, you know, girls with big tits. And, you know, and it's like, I get it. It's they're you could say they're farming your loosh.
There you go.
Because
they are in a sense.
The occult people have always said that outdoor concerts, especially the rock and roll ones, that's just a loosh gathering festival, a ritual.
Yeah, no one looks up at the giant loosh funnel that's above them.
Yeah.
You look up, it's a loosh.
Yeah. Boy, was that a lot of fun getting drunk and high and going to concerts. It was so much fun.
Hell yeah.
It'd be the worst thing for me today. I don't like crowds. I can't stand crowds. And I'm like, huh, it's the kind of thing where now you have to check yourself. Who's sucking energy off me?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, alcohol's the same. That's why the Muslims don't drink it, because, you know, blackout, a gin goes in your head.
What do you think about, because this is because we might have to wind down soon. It's been a few hours, it's getting a bit late in the UK, but I wanted to talk about this with you guys. I want to get your opinions, because people have been kind of pressuring me to discuss it, maybe get someone on for an interview. The Nazca mummies.
I have a personal theory that's combined with others that the Nazca lines are vectors for navigation. Although, why would ET need a vector with UFO and computer quantum? Mm-hmm. So I don't understand the lines either. But some of them look like strip mining.
Yeah, you're right.
If you look at the photos, I'll send you to them. Some of the Nazca lines, they just carved off the top of a mountain.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think this is ancient strip mining. Yeah, the mummies are very interesting. I think some Pete Peterson, that guy, whistleblower, a long time ago, he said that there's vast tunnels, well, all over the earth, but under Nazca. The oblong-headed people that Brian Forster has his...
Yeah. Brian Forster, yeah, he's got a...
I mean, that is not head-binding. These are oblong-headed people. There was some human race back in the day. There's probably still a few people with, you know, giant heads. You know, not giant that big, but maybe like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's... I don't know. There's a million theories on that. But the Nazca mummies look real.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we were talking before, it's like, I think there's a little bit of truth and a little bit of disinformation in the whole thing, right? Some of those things that you can't really deny, I mean, like medical evidence, MRI scans, you know, all these independent things. And Brian Forster has done that. He's at independent labs. This is pre, you know, all that shit coming out of Mexico and everything. But there's that part of it. And then the Peruvian government trying to shut down their press conference last week or 2 weeks ago or whatever. That was interesting. Why would they come?
Yeah, it was like the Ministry of Culture or something. And they came in and,
Ministry of Silence
is what it is.
But this is because people, like a lot of people in the American side of the UFO conversation, or at least just like the Western side on UFO Twitter, they're all like, nah, this is fake. Like, ignore this. Like, don't talk about the Peruvian mummies, the Nazca mummies. And then, you know, a few other people are going like, no, like, we really need to pay attention to this. Scientists have gone out and validated it. But then there's like stories about some of them being faked in the past. This Jamie Musan or whatever his name is, mm-hmm. like this guy's apparently done like fakes. Sure, the so it's like, hard to know what's really going on with that.
I think they always slip a lot of real shit in there with a bunch of bullshit so that it could just be all disregarded, right?
You know, there's always disinformation.
Yeah.
You know, there's a story. I like it because it's the Navy. William Tompkins' book.
Oh, yeah.
It's Time in the Navy. And he said that Admiral Botha was briefed by Secretary of the Navy Forrestal. And Forrestal said, you know, all these crashed UFOs, you know, take them to San Diego and study them. But books aren't going to help you. Every single book on Earth has disinformation in it. You're on your own. Now, that stuck with me as very profound. That's 1946 or whatever. Today, obviously, we have counterculture books about all that stuff. And so that was probably overblown, you know, but probably back then in America, because Forrestal picked Botha because he was Australian.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't been mind controlled by the American educational system.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's 1946. So I have to wonder, there's books today, I think, that have disclosure and truth, and, you know, it's all mixed up. But every mainstream history book, science book, I think they're all, it's a mixture of, you know, genuine and real and bullshit. Well,
I definitely think, I mean, like, our history, our ancient history, our understanding of what was really going on, like, that's absolutely obfuscated. And, you know, we can point towards the right institutions that have actually got the information. Like, we know that the Vatican's got its archives and the Smithsonian's got its own information. So, like, you know, antiquities and ancient history and the timeline, I mean, things like Göbekli Tepe popping up and kind of disproving it, it will naturally start to get contradicted, as it's already begun to get contradicted anyway. But yeah, I mean, like, it's all being hidden in certain ways by certain interests in terms of, like, ancient history and also the science and technology side of it. But, like, I've been digging into, like, the kind of psychoacoustic architecture and some of these ancient structures, and it's starting
That's amazing.
Dude, it's fascinating to me. Like, it's just, like, it's starting to look like they were using the Earth as a computer. Like, the same kind of technologies that we're leveraging now through different methodologies, they were using kind of like the natural compounds of the Earth, specific geometric placements, specific harmonic tones. And I find that fascinating, because that's a lost science that's only just being rediscovered now.
It's still kept alive in the mystery schools.
Yeah.
Legit. But, you know, that, like, in ancient Egypt, the Temple of Hathor and the Osirian and everything, they postulate, you know, I think John Anthony West and some others, Robert Boval, they've done a great job. And they said, you know, they were definitely using frequency in different temples. Maybe you went to a different temple for a different, either a healing practice or a communication practice or a knowledge boost practice. And that makes sense, because the pyramids were all about astral traveling and Swiss Army knives, you know, power generation and everything. And so we're starting, everyone's starting to piece this together. But there's still a lot of, you know, scientists and archaeologists who are just stubborn as hell. I mean, Graham Hancock does a good job, but he treads that narrow line between mainstream and alternative. It was a miracle he got his series on, what, HBO or something?
Netflix.
Netflix as well. But it's extremely telling, just the proportion of the response from mainstream media to that series being released. I mean, like, what the fuck? They were calling it the most dangerous conspiracy Netflix series ever released. A far right, a racist, like, everything they could possibly do.
They attacked the shit out of it.
Like,
yeah.
Why? Like, who was it within that network at some level of the hierarchy that was like, make sure people do not watch this? Funnily enough, the thing is, when you do that, everyone watches it. You know what I mean? Like, you completely shoot yourself in the foot. But seriously, like, the fact that there was such a kind of, like, unified front within the mainstream media, demonizing. They called Graham Hancock, who's got a black wife, racist. They were like, he's promoting white, like, pro-white conspiracy theory. It's just the maddest thing. I couldn't believe it.
It's because, obviously, there's factions within the media systems and in the world, you know, Hollywood and everything. There are factions now, and it looks like people with, you know, light gray hats are have a little more sway. But it shows you, they know people are so stupid. I'm sorry, that they won't do their due diligence and fact checking.
That's
I mean,
it.
I got criticized for something by somebody, and I said, okay, pal, go read these books. And the person actually did it. And they were like, oh, you're right. Sorry.
There you go.
That's really, really refreshing.
But that's one person, you know, and sadly, you know, I'm not saying the world is stupid and ignorant because of their fall. I don't think it's well, I think it's just our society is carefully engineered, our reality. And, but now we're seeing little chips of armor, you know, splinters of armor coming off. It's a slow process. It's, you know, like, everyone wants disclosure, and it's like, I always say, disclosure of what? Because there's a shit ton of stuff, and you know, everyone's like, I just want to study ancient Egypt, and I said, well, that's linked to extraterrestrials. And they're like, I'm not interested in extraterrestrials. I don't, and I'm like, no matter where you go in history, It doesn't make any sense unless you plug ET in, and commerce and trade and interaction and marrying and mating and all that stuff. It doesn't make any sense. You know, and that's the thing. People don't like that. They want to do one little thing over here. You know, and you know, it's trying to find people that are truly open-minded to see the holistic big picture. It's really hard. You know, I've talked to people, I'm sure you guys have. I'm open-minded at night. You're open-minded this much on some things. And, you know, religion is a hot topic to try to part. That argument is just, it's moot. It'll never end. And that's the point, I think, mm-hmm. to religions. They're so subjective and everything. It's like, you'll never get anywhere. And I think, you know, even to be fair, Joseph Farrell said that. He said, you know, all my years at Oxford, I learned a lot about religion, and that's where I got into the conspiracy, because it's in the religious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I want to get
looking for hard answers there. You know, no, you'll only find
more questions,
tantalizing clues and suggestions.
Some bullshit.
A lot of bullshit. You know, the deep state owns the law, so everyone's like, you know, oh my God, you know, we got to sue these people, you know, like Danny Sheehan and Greer, they want to sue the U.S. government. And I'm like, I wrote them both an email and I said, you know, I got a friend who's a federal judge, and he tells me, you know, if a program is unacknowledged and it's a special access black program, it's outside of the jurisdiction of the law. All can't touch it. So anybody can get up there, Chris Mellon or Abby Loeb, and oh, I'm not, you know, that's illegal. I would never be involved in that. And they're telling the truth because, you know, if you're, they call Chris Mellon the mayor of Area 51. Jack Sarfatti found that out. And so it's like, you know, the law is so interpretational, but in that regard, into the military industrial complex, that whole corporate world, if something's national security, black program, it's outside the law. That's why it's unacknowledged. So it's like, everyone's like, oh, we got to sue the government and get the truth. And I'm like,
it's very deep.
Yeah, I have the truth.
You'll never have the truth. Hey, I gotta love you guys, but I gotta run.
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock in the UK, bro. We're gonna, bedtime.
All right.
Yeah.
Good night, guys.
Take care. It was really good.
Wow.